are listening to the Elephant in the Room podcast with your host, Sutta Singh. Each week, we will bring you a diverse range of inspiring speakers on issues of inequality and inequity. You will hear stories about fairness, justice, belonging, and about best practice for creating a more inclusive workplace. So, if you are an individual or leader interested in a fairer, equitable, compassionate society and workplace, this podcast is for you.
My guest on this episode of the Elephant in the Room podcast is Maya Sadasivan, a NLP Master Practitioner and ICF PCC Executive Coach specializing in leadership development programs. As a coach, her focus is to get leaders comfortable with the uncomfortable. She believes that greatness is inherent, discipline trumps challenge, and humor helps us to find our strengths. In the past, she has been a journalist and teacher. Hey, Maya. Welcome to the Elephant in the Room podcast. Thank you for being a guest and spending some time with us here today to talk about a very, very important topic.
Hi, Sudha. As usual, it's a pleasure and a privilege to be able to share my thoughts and talk with you.
Brilliant. Okay, so let's just get started. Work from home and remote working has meant that organizations and managers have had to cede control over their employees and teams. How has the role of managers changed in the past year and a half? And what does this mean for teams? There's a lot to unpack in there.
Yes, I know. I was just thinking, where do I start? The role of managers has literally transitioned from maybe the first or the second gear to the fourth gear. And it has simultaneously redefined a lot of workplace structures and strategies. And it's almost as if the managers, without warning, were thrown into the deep end. And nobody is asking, do you know how to swim? They not only have to swim themselves, they have to ensure that the team also swims. In fact, it is a point to be noted that the managers have often realized that from individual contributor, when they started handling teams, they moved from doing things to getting it done. But in today's virtual world, where you have team members distributed across geographies, across time zones, across multiple domains which need to be coordinated, suddenly you find it's not as simple as just getting it done. And the managers that I have interacted with have often realized that it is no longer about technical competence alone. The managers now are under pressure to bring in an element of character competence. In fact, Sudha, I have seen an amazing rise in the number of critical programs or the life skills programs that we call, you know, how we refer to in our company. And it is very heartening that managers have realized that technical competence alone won't do. Character competence needs to be built. And I think that is one of the major changes that the managers are adapting to in this virtual world, which the pandemic has really made or rather established as a new norm.
Okay, and perhaps we'll touch on the teams later, what it means for the teams. So what can organizations do to ensure that individuals and teams are able to still deliver and be productive? It's not just technical competence, as you said. How does the character competence support delivery or productivity?
It is interesting when you realize that when people are face to face, while they do realize that there is a kind of a limitation to transparency across hierarchy, it doesn't really matter so much in the sense when you can see people around you, when you can see your team members, you can see your manager, somehow there is a compensation that happens for the lack of transparency. Whereas in the virtual time, this becomes a major, major issue. And one of the first things that the companies should ensure, enforce, and establish is transparency through communication channels. Not just one channel or two channels, but with as many channels as possible, there should be complete transparency across hierarchy, across the task forces, across teams. In this context, I would like to mention the concept of objectives and key results. This concept is quite old in the sense the genesis was in 1950s and 60s. Having said that, in today's virtual world, I have found there is an increased understanding and appreciation of this tool called OKRs. And one of the principal aspects of OKR is the transparency it brings across board in terms of goals, in terms of process, in terms of system. And this is what I believe strongly, Sudha, that companies should establish. I mean, there are many other things that a company should look at. However, pivotal to everything is transparency through communication channels.
And this transparency is about systems and processes, the goals and objectives of the organization.
Very true. I mean, if you look at it today, the need for a company's vision, mission, values to be linked and aligned to every employee's work suddenly has become the need of the hour. I mean, There were times when people would just walk into office, walk out of office, do the task that was delegated. But suddenly people are asking, why am I doing this? And how is it benefiting the company? And the reason for that, I think, Sudha, is work from home has kind of skewed the work-life balance. Isn't it ironic that sitting at home, our work-life balance has become skewed? And so all the more reason that employees are asking, what is this task that I'm doing? Why is it required for me to be up till 10 p.m.? And what is the value that I'm contributing to the company when I do work till 10 p.m.? And therefore, like I said, that transparency element comes in. And this transparency encourages commitment, belonging, involvement, support. And this is what I meant by character competence.
That's very interesting. I like that phrase very much, character competence. The whole reason for this session of the podcast is what I heard from you a couple of weeks back when you spoke about performance vocabulary. I'm really fascinated to hear more about what, according to you, is performance vocabulary, and does it differ from one company to another company, and how important is it?
Thank you so much for giving me this space to actually share my thoughts on this, Sudha. It just happened that the number of interventions I was doing increased during the pandemic. There was more requirement and requests from managers to help streamline and align their teams in terms of performance and productivity. And during the training need analysis, I started asking managers, what do they mean by performance and what do they mean by productivity? And then when I would meet the team members and I asked them, so what's performance for you? What's productivity for you? I realized that there was a gap. And so I kind of got down to exploring a little more and understanding the boss's demand for efficiency and a team member's submission of that efficiency didn't seem to match. You know, the boss would say, I expect more ownership from you. And the team member is like, hey, I am demonstrating ownership. But the boss looks at it as accountability. Now, what is the difference between accountability and ownership? And in fact, I think one of the things I realized was everyone uses language the way they have learned it, the way they understand it, and the way they are comfortable using it. And this is where the gap came between expectations and outcomes. And so I came up with this structure where I facilitated teams and their managers to come together to create clarity on what is the meaning of the word they use when it comes to work. So if the manager says accountability and they say responsible for execution of tasks, and if the manager says ownership is responsibility for the outcome of the task, suddenly, the employee shifts from completing the task to hanging around and supporting team members so that the overall team task is complete. Immediately, you see that accountability translated into ownership. Similarly, a lot of employees believe that they have skill. That means they know how to do something and they do it well. But the bosses were asking for competence. And it was like the cloud of ambiguity that was hanging over a team. And the team was like, okay, listen, what's the difference between skill and competence? And then the manager would give an example. And that is when the team understands that skill is knowing what to do, knowing how to do it, doing it well, and doing it error-free. Whereas competence is when there is a pressure of time, of infrastructure, of abilities, and then you still deliver, that skill becomes competence. Okay, now there's clarity. Another example that I'd like to share with you is when we talk about experience. You know, Sudha, it's very easy to say, okay, I have 10 years experience in the industry. I have 12 years of experience in the industry. I have 18 years of experience. What exactly does this experience entail? And I remember with one of these teams that I was working with, we actually sat down and wrote down, okay, if someone says 15 years of experience, what are your expectations from this guy? And when they wrote down the expectations, there was so much of divergent thought process that was going on that everyone got excited to come on the same page. And they actually created an experience matrix. And if I may share with you, the first level of experience was, does the person know how to do damage control? The second level of experience was, okay, the guy knows how to do damage control. Does the person know how to identify problems when a requirement comes? So is he a problem finder? The next level was, okay, the guy knows how to do damage control. He knows how to anticipate problems, but does he flag it and does he give solution options? And the fourth level of experience was, he does damage control, he identifies problems, he flags and he gives solutions. And most importantly, independently, he preempts the issue. Suddenly, you know the amazing thing, Sudha? Not only people were very clear about what was expected of them, suddenly they started having a career path. And managers realized, oh, this makes my appraisal much easier. And this is where I coined the phrase performance vocabulary.
It's amazing. I think there are so many words and there's so much confusing language around what the expectation is, the experience that is required, or how you appraise a person on the work that they have done. Definitely the two examples that you gave, it gives immediate clarity onto what they can expect from a person, or what the manager should be expecting, or what a team member should expect to do. That's very, very interesting.
You had asked me how important it is for companies. Yeah. Let me share with you the concept of collaboration. And I think it's a buzzword nowadays. Everybody says collaborate, collaborate. What exactly does collaboration entail is the blue point, right? Yeah. And when I share this confusion and the teams, they come up with their own definitions and then we come up with a team definition. And one of the most interesting definitions that came up for collaboration is it is coordination plus cooperation. And coordination is process-driven, cooperation is people-driven. And then I asked a question, so do you want your team to be process-driven or people-driven? And it is surprising, a lot of people first instinctively said people-driven and then paused and said, okay, no, we want to be process-driven. And during exigencies, we need to be people-driven. Fair enough. It's up to the team to define what works for them.
Yeah.
And I think that is the beauty of performance vocabulary. As a team, as a business vertical, or as a company, we create performance vocabulary that manifests performance and productivity for the employees.
I find this so interesting. I want to ask you a million questions, but I'll stick to the ones that I've planned.
Okay.
So even before the pandemic, the shape of teams had been evolving, right? Mm-hmm. In the last decade, you didn't have the same team in the same place forever and ever and ever. In today's world, of course, post-pandemic, teams are more dynamic, fluid, changing from one project to another. In such a scenario, who in a business can go about building its performance vocabulary? Because we are talking about teams actually taking decisions on what performance means, right? And defining what it means to perform or what it means to deliver.
This is a good question. And I think when today's virtual space so tempts people to pass the buck, because nobody is really visible. And I think one of the most hated and the most frequently used line is there's a connectivity issue. And when that comes into play and you wonder, okay, ultimately, on whose neck is the guillotine? that makes people pause and say, hey, not my neck. And so here I would like to share with you that I strongly believe that the vision, mission, values of a company should not be restricted to the website. It should actually be leveraged to build work culture. Let me share a particular company's value system. So like they have an acronym, BRISK. B refers to benchmarking to be the best in the market. R refers to recognizing contribution. I refers to improved collaboration. S refers to satisfied customers. And K refers to keeping pace with the market trends. Now, when you look at this acronym BRISK, it strikes me that it is such a perfect way to develop work culture that is sustained. And it helps to actually define performance means doing the best based on customer requirement. Productivity means doing the best in the minimum time with minimum infrastructure. Now, this space would naturally require the company as a whole to own performance vocabulary. And they can use their vision, mission, and values to distill clarity in performance words. What are performance words? You could look at transparency. What does it mean to be transparent? What does it mean to be flexible? What does it mean to be agile? How is flexible different from agile? What is the meaning of, say, effective versus efficient? In fact, you know, so there are a lot of teams with whom I have worked, I have asked them to create a document that is an organic, dynamic document where as a team grows into the project and evolves in its work function, they're able to keep adding vocabulary and keep building it. And anyone who joins the team is introduced to this vocabulary so that there is absolute crystal clear understanding of expectations right from day one. So the company should own performance vocabulary, but it could be built in to be customized for teams and team requirements.
So it is possible that different teams have different performance vocabulary.
Absolutely. And what will help to unify it all would be to keep it within the ambit of the company's values, vision, and mission.
What happens to organizations when they don't have a performance vocabulary? I don't know of many organizations that do have performance vocabulary. They do define on what the expectation is from teams. There are a lot of KPIs, et cetera, et cetera. What happens to those organizations when they do not have that vocabulary? How do they navigate the project?
Understood. I believe that a lot of teams and a lot of companies instinctively have a top-down approach in terms of clarity on what performance vocabulary is. So the boss says, this is efficiency, this is efficiency. The boss says, this is effectiveness, this is effectiveness. Now the question is, does the boss explain to anybody what is efficiency or effectiveness, or do they expect the employees to go to Webster or Oxford Dictionary and figure it out themselves? So here, my point is, if a company does not bring people, its employees, onto the same platform in terms of expectation understanding, then the fallout of that would be there would be a lack of transparency, there would be a lack of clarity, there would be a lack of focus, and there would definitely be a lack of cohesive, sustained performance. So this would be a fallout. And I think perhaps companies don't use a jargon performance vocabulary, but in their own way, in their own style, do try and bring in clarity. It's just that I believe if you use the frame performance vocabulary, your KPIs become clearer, your performance management tool becomes easier, the employees understand what is expected of them, and outcomes suddenly are so obvious and so meant to be achieved.
That's really interesting. And whose responsibility? We discussed who in the business is building the performance vocabulary. I think you mentioned in the last response that it's the responsibility of everyone in the organization to build the vocabulary. But is there someone specific who defines it? Is there an owner? Should there be an owner for the performance vocabulary within a company?
This is interesting. I believe that would depend on the dynamics of the company. If it is a hierarchy-driven company, then obviously it'll be top-down. Otherwise, if it is a company which, by the way, situation more often nowadays, where there's a lot of lateral growth and there's a lot of deconstruction of hierarchical aspects, I think there what happens is the whole performance vocabulary could be a contributive, organic, dynamic space. And it has to change. You know, as you bring in diversity, as you bring in multiple domains into the same company, automatically the performance vocabulary will need to be adjusted, accommodated, fine-tuned. So I believe that performance vocabulary needs to be organic and dynamic. And I believe it needs to be revisited periodically. Rather than an ownership of an individual, I would recommend that the company's vision, mission, values trigger an understanding of what is it that you expect and what are the outcomes, and therefore define performance vocabulary.
I mean, do you believe that the larger organizations have already got this in place? And if organizations don't have this vocabulary in place, what can you do in order to get your teams all on the same page, so to speak, on the vocabulary?
I think one thing a lot of managers have told me that they are struggling with their teams when it comes to commitment, when it comes to clarifying on time, when it comes to involvement, and when it comes to taking pride in not just their achievement, but the team achievement. And when we were having these discussions, I realized that commitment, clarification, involvement, achievement, these are very task outcome words. Okay. And when we kind of analyze this, when does commitment come? When a team member feels accepted by the team? When does a team member feel comfortable to clarify? When there's a sense of belonging to the team? When does a team member get involved not only in their task, but the team's task? When they feel supported, they reciprocate support. And when do they feel a sense of achievement is when there is an atmosphere of team pride. So we realized that while we were looking at task outcomes of commitment, clarification, involvement, and achievement, we were actually struggling to build acceptance, belonging, support, and pride. And it was absolutely magical, Sudha, when teams came together to focus on creating this acceptance, the sense of belonging, the sense of support and pride. Automatically, these relationship outcomes translated into task outcomes. And that is where they brought in the vocabulary of performance. Okay, when I feel accepted, I find it easier to shift from accountability to ownership. When I feel a sense of belonging, I find it simpler to shift from just passion for my work towards passion for excellence of team outcomes. When I feel supported, I find it quicker to actually reach out to people and turn my skill into competence. So at the end of the day, what I realized is that performance vocabulary and its value actually help to create relationship outcomes in the team. And that is so, so important today when teams, even on calls with each other, they don't even see each other. The videos are not switched on. It's just the audio. Even the audio is need-to basis. In such scenario, it becomes very important that you focus on relationship outcomes, you focus on performance vocabulary, and seriously, the task outcomes will take care of itself.
I love the words that you've used, acceptance, belonging, ownership. Those are the words that you want to be using when you think of employees who are committed to an organization. How important is it for the C-suite to be championing this?
Oh, very important. In fact, I would say very pivotal. In one of our previous conversations, I remember talking about this, having a social learning platform within companies, you know, the peer learning communities. Mm. And in these social learning platforms, This is where the C-suite actually gets hands-on in discussion with employees across verticals, across domains, across hierarchy. And they get a glimpse of real-time issues, and the employees get real-time flavor of how the C-suite is thinking and feeling. To give you an example, I remember in one of our leadership programs, we had invited the CFO to come and talk about how projects and how business revenue is calculated. And we were talking to a group of first-time managers who had never really been involved in the financial aspects of a project. And when they got to understand how the CFO views business revenue, how the CFO views cost effectiveness, how the CFO views cutting one's losses, it just reframed the first-time manager's approach to their work. And excellence was a given. So the moment employees start understanding how C-suite personnel, they think and they approach and they build business and they create that inspiring space where every employee realizes that they are one of the drops in the ocean, and the ocean becomes an ocean because that drop is there. And that is where I think C-suite should spearhead the vision, mission, values. The C-suite should translate the vision, mission, values into performance vocabulary, and the C-suite should use social learning platforms like peer communities to explore, experiment, expand the whole work culture of excellence.
Wow. So the long and short of it is that it is important for the C-suite to be championing this. Do you believe performance vocabulary gives organizations a competitive advantage?
Very true. In fact, the words that I used of acceptance and belonging come so much more easily when everyone knows exactly what each one is talking about. And I believe that in these times, creating a sense of togetherness comes from the fact that we all speak the same language. And there is less misunderstanding, there's less gap in interpretation, there is greater clarity in expectations and outcomes, there is greater guarantee of being recognized and rewarded, and therefore there is greater commitment and involvement in contributing towards a company's business trajectories. So definitely in these worlds, especially the virtual times, we have as a company got to look for spaces that we can actually leverage and build into spaces of togetherness, spaces of involvement, spaces of excellence. I would lay a lot of emphasis on that. Does one feel proud of belonging to a company? Does one feel proud of belonging to a team? Does one feel proud working for a specific customer? It matters. And it cannot be an individual thing. It has to be a company-wide space.
So it is a competitive advantage. Definitely.
Absolutely.
One last question. So would you say it would also contribute towards creating a culture, because organizations are struggling to define what culture is now?
I think if you start looking at performance vocabulary as a tool, it simplifies the performance management system. It simplifies the KPI. In fact, it gives more structure to KPIs. It gives more measurable, tangible clarity.
Relatable?
Yeah, absolutely. Very well said. Relatable. Understanding of what needs to be done. And I think, like you mentioned in the previous question, that is what gives employees a competitive edge. When they all know they're on the same page, performance increases, enhances, and they all become more productive. Isn't that the beauty of it all? It is that individual performance translating into team productivity. And that gives every company an edge in the market. And that is why it is so, so crucial that everyone comes together and creates this organic, dynamic, ever-evolving space of becoming better versions of themselves. Talking about culture, yes, I would go back to vision, mission, values. Nothing beats a vision, mission, values trigger point for creating a work culture. And performance vocabulary creates a work culture by bringing everybody on the common platform or the same platform.
Brilliant. Thank you so much, Maya. This has been really enlightening. And I'm sure for a lot of our listeners, it is something that we all need to be conscious of as we move forward in a post-pandemic world and try to define how we can get teams and individuals to be more productive in the workplace.
So well said, Sudha. In fact, I'm quite sure that a lot of people out there are, without realizing it, building performance vocabulary. And I think this conversation between you and me just puts it out in black and white and makes it more accessible as a concept and more structured as an action item. So thank you so much for this space.
Thank you.
Thank you for joining us this week on the Elephant in the Room podcast. Don't forget to subscribe to the show on any of your favorite platforms, iTunes, Spotify, Google Podcasts. And if you enjoyed listening to the podcast today, don't forget to write a review and tell your friends. Sign up on the link in the show notes to receive updates on our guest speakers, blogs, and events. And don't forget to tune in every Thursday for new episodes.